We do have a good number of folks here this morning. We appreciate everybody making the effort to be here. It seemed like most of the conversations started this morning with a question of, do you have power? And those kind of questions related to the storm or the events on Friday. And some people do and some people don't. But glad everybody made it out this morning. And on the way here, was talking about songs that would be appropriate for this time as far as like, peace be still, upon the solid rock I stand, hold to Jesus and change your hand. Those kind of songs there would be appropriate for, maybe those today, but anyway, it's one that, we did have a little bit of shaky with. I want us to draw attention though to Acts 18 chapter, the passage we had read for a few minutes ago. I preached lessons out of Acts a number of times in my time of preaching, and I'm always amazed by different ways you could focus on certain parts of passages or certain lessons out of the same passage and get different lessons out of that passage. And this one of those, when you look at Acts 17th chapter, you're looking at Paul's travels through places like talks about there of Thessalonica and going there and preaching the gospel three Sabbath days and the reception he had there. Eventually being ran out of town, having to leave because of controversy occurred. And then Berea, that Paul goes there and passes there, verse 11, that those of Berea were more fair-minded than those of Thessalonica. And they search Scripture daily to see whether these things are so. And the reception there, as far as people are listening and being interested with the gospel. But then again, controversy arose, or people kind of stirred up the crowds and people left. And so Paul had to leave, so he goes to Athens, the very hub of intellectualism, I would call it like that, false knowledge of the idea of humanists of that day and age, if you would, and the recession Paul had there. But then we go ahead, and as you travel with Paul in this missionary journey, he goes to a place called Corinth, and as at Corinth there, he meets a couple. And I really just want to focus in on this couple here, because as we had read for us ago, that it talks about this couple, and we're going to make some points about what they did there and what's important about that. But I got to think about, in my time of preaching, and in our times of travels, Regina and I, there have been numerous places we've gone to and often may be impressed by a couple. Maybe the couple that kept us during the gospel meeting, or maybe a couple at congregations that I worked at where they were always maybe going out and being involved in helping those of the congregation need to help, or helping people in the community need to help. Or maybe as a couple, as they would have in one place, a college town, and they made sure the college students had a place to go to. They could hang out at their house, and every now and then they would feed them there. But it was a place where it was kind of like the center of activity, the young people, was at their house. Or maybe another couple that was always, in, as far as welcoming the strangers, the visitors that were passing through. And there's all these couples, and I first started talking about names of people that we had known, but I thought, no, because that's leaving out somebody. I know it'll leave out some couples like that. But as you think here about Priscilla and Aquila, when thinking about a couple that really, just by saying the name of one, you automatically think of the other. If, for instance, I say Aquila, and I think everybody here will automatically put in the next name there, Priscilla. Or if I would say Priscilla and, you again automatically think of her husband Aquila. And that's because they were a couple that were gathered about. And there's some things about this couple that the Bible tells us about that are interesting background type information. One is that says that Aquila is a native Pontus, a Roman province of Northern Asia Minor. And here's, that what's important about that this is a couple that, well, I'm going to show you a map in a few minutes for now as far as where this is at, but this is really north of where a lot of the gospel story takes place. When we think about in the land of Canaan or Jerusalem and going up into Syria and then go over to Galatia, this is even north of that that he comes from. And this place is mentioned as being one of the places. In Acts 2nd chapter, on the day of Pentecost, Peter preaches the gospel, gives us a whole list of areas of provinces that Jews came to be their Jews on that day. And Pontus is mentioned there in Acts 2 verse 9 as being one of those places people came from, which may explain a question I have in just a minute or two I'll address too. And also is a place that we know had Christians at there. And Peter's writing in 1 Peter. He mentions to us 1 Peter 1, verse 1. Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ, to the pilgrims of the dispersion of Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, and Bithynia. That phrase there of the dispersion, that there were Jews that were scattered throughout all these other countries during the time of the captivity, way back in the Old Testament, whenever they were taken off their land and dispersed throughout the world. And they stayed there. Not all the Jews came back to Jerusalem. And there were some that had heard the gospel, some that obeyed the gospel. That's who Peter's really writing to in 1 Peter. He's talking to the Christians that had obeyed the gospel, that had Jewish background. And so the map here I talked about here is right here, and that is, you may notice here down at Antioch, and go down, the map kind of cuts off here at Damascus, go on down south, kind of like where the light switch is at, that would be Jerusalem. And go on up there and you find the area that talks about of Cappadocia, and then it talks about Bithynia, Pontus, all the way up there. That's where this man came from, as far as physical location of this here. And yeah, I'm just kind of amazed at how the gospel spread to that day and age. How quickly spread from one little place, one town, one city of Jerusalem, and within 30 years that we talk about the gospel being spread to all these remote places. And Aquila Priscilla is a testimony of that. And then also, as you look here about some of the information given to us, we have Claudius, Caesar, mentioned to us there in the passage we had read for us. And probably what's significant about that, two things. One is that he's the only emperor, the only Caesar that's actually mentioned twice in the book of Acts. The other occasion about that is Acts 11, verse 28. And there Paul's at Antioch, and a prophet by the name of Agabus comes to him. And he said he stood up and showed by the Spirit that there was going to be a great famine throughout all the world, which also happened in the days of Claudius Caesar. And so this here is the man that's talked about there that we read about here in Acts 18 chapter. And again, what's significant is not just fact of a name, but it says that they were actually expelled. The Jews were expelled out of Rome during his reign, which means the secular writing says that this happened about 49 A.D. Now the Jews by that time had become pretty well known as being a cantankerous group of people. You know, within 30 years that they would actually have their city destroyed by the Roman Empire, because basically Rome finally flipped their hands and said, we can't do anything with the group of people. We can't keep them in subjection to us, that they are simply an obstinate group. And in fact, as you look at some of the historians said that they were always indulgent, causing riots at the instigation of Christus. And that phrase Christus there is one that some thinks is talking about actually what they were upset about. The riot he's talking about is that there were some of the Jews that they were talking about Christ, about Christus, as actually in the Hebrew language is spelled out. And they were talking about that, and Jews and Christians, much like what happened at places like Corinth and at Berea and other places, that when the Jews heard that there were some preaching about Christ, they got upset and started riots in our cities. Well, that happened in Rome. And the Roman Empire, just kind of a side note here, the Roman Empire really did not care a whole lot about religion. I mean, for most part, they were a paganistic group of people, but if you had a particular religion, they were okay. You keep your religion. However, what they did not want was you going out there and trying to teach other people your religion. Don't try to proselytize anybody else, because see, that often creates controversy, people get upset. And so that's why they kind of had a hands-off approach to Christianity in their first part of the book of Acts. They just simply saw this as a group of Jews arguing among each other, and as long as it stayed like that, then they didn't do much about it. And you may notice in our passage, Acts 18 chapter, says, not that Caesar expelled the Christians out of Rome, he expelled the Jews out of Rome. And that would include all those who had obeyed the gospel also, because they were just background. And so here's this couple here that would have been basically forced to leave their home. And now we don't know how long they were at Rome. And we'll find that they're mentioned later on in the passage we're going to mention here. But basically they had to leave to go to someplace else, and here they went up at Corinth. And there's things we know about them and some things we don't know about them. I kind of neglected to mention that Aquila's name means, if you go by historians, it means eagle. And Priscilla's name means little old lady. It's what the idea of Priscilla is. Some would say it kind of drops the little old, but they just say little lady. And so that's what kind of the name means as far as the background of them. But something we don't know about them. We don't know, for instance, were they already Christians before Paul met them? Good chance they have been. I mean, good chance, like you said before, that the people from Pontus heard the gospel on the day of Pentecost. And we know some of them would go back home and they would go back talking about this Christianity, the Christ, Jesus being the Messiah. And it's possible they could have learned that away. As possible, they may have heard it some other way. It may be possible that Paul converted them. Well, we can't necessarily rule it out. The Bible doesn't say he didn't do that. However, what I notice is that when Paul writes to the church of Corinth, and he talks about those he had baptized at Corinth, he doesn't mention them. Now, again, in all fairness, he only mentions a couple of people who baptized at Corinth. And so you kind of fill in the blank there. I tend to think, personally, that probably they had already heard the gospel before they met Paul, but either way, it really doesn't detract from what the Bible tells us about them. But here's what we have here. When I think about Priscilla and Aquila, I just kind of notice some very simple things about them that I think we all can learn from. One is that they worked. They worked both physically and both spiritually. Physically, it says they were tent makers. That we look at it here, the Bible sometimes tells us about the occupation of people. The fishermen, Peter, Andrew, James, and John were fishermen. That was their occupation. Joseph was a carpenter. Jesus was a carpenter's son. And other people that we talk about, Lydia and her occupation, here, they're tent makers. Now, in my mind, I think about tents, probably like you, maybe you like me, that you think about these little tents we have today, maybe a boy camp, tent type deal there. But their tents were a lot different. Their tents were heavy-duty tents. They were intended to be lived in, and you stayed out there in those tents for a long time. So this here was a trade that was very important. And Jews were very big on the idea of trades. And that they, in fact, that they say that basically that, you know, you were expected to teach your son a craft. In fact, the phrase they had, the saying they had was that a father does not teach his son a trade, is teaching their son to be a thief. And the Bible mentions a number of times the idea of working, you know, the idea of us as far as working physically in 1 Timothy 5 verse 8. But if anyone does not provide for his own, especially those of his household, his denied faith is worth an unbeliever. We may think about all kinds of things you do that would label you as being apostate or being an unbeliever. How many people would say, well, being a person that won't provide for his family would put you in that category? But that's what Paul says here. Another passage against the mind is over in Ephesians 4:28. But him is still no longer, but rather let him labor, work in his hands what's good, that he may have something to give him that's need. And there's a need to the work of being able to help others, to be able to provide yourself to help others. So we see that with this couple. However, what really stands out is that not only did they work, but they worked together. They are working together. In a time when maybe my mom and dad seemed like they always did everything together. Literally to the point of going to the factory. They worked the same shift, they rode in the same car. I don't think they quite worked on the same production line, but they worked in the same building. And then when they came home, that we would go to farm, and guess what? We're always working together. And it's working together. It's very important, again, as you look at the lines of Christians, that is that they were working together in the sense of they could do that. That's one thing I want to stress here, and that stands out to me, is that there are a couple sometimes that kind of tolerate each other. They kind of fuss and fight and then, you know, kind of tolerate. But there are couples that actually work together. And I just kind of, you know, throw this out there again. I know we just have probably a few that are going to one of these days within the next 5, 10, 20, 30 years want to start dating. And maybe as parents, that's something you need to kind of maybe talk to your children a little bit about when they start thinking about that special person that they come home with their gleam in their eye. And they start thinking, that guy swoon them when they say their name, that kind of, you know, response you hear from them. But maybe a question you need to ask them, or something you need to kind of point out to them is, they may be handsome, they may be pretty, and they may be have a lot of qualities, but do you think you can work with them? Do you think that they'll work with you in life? Because couples need to be able to work together. Both physically and spiritually speaking. We got to be able to work together if you want to have a happy home. And when you think about what the Bible talks about in Ephesians 5th chapter, we have this comparison of the husband and wife and Christ and church. And I'm not going to go and read the whole passage here this morning for this lesson. But one thing you just kind of need to notice is that when it talks about things like the wife being submission or yielding to her husband or the husband as far as cherishing and nursing his wife as he does his own body, what that means there is not that the wife comes to the husband and says, okay, you're supposed to be cherishing me. You're supposed to be loving me like you do your own body. That's the husband's responsibility to do that. It's not the wife's responsibility to say to him, you need to be doing this. And whenever the Bible talks about the wife being submissive or yielding to her husband, it's not a case where the husband goes to the wife and says, okay, you yield to me now. No, that's her responsibility. That's her part of the equation. We have to realize what is our job, what's not our job in the marriage relationship. The husband's job is outlined as far as loving and cherishing and submitting to Christ and being a spiritual leader at home. And the wife's job is to love and cherish and yield and again serve Christ. And if everybody does that, you're going to be working together as opposed to working apart and separate from each other. And so this is a couple that's working together. And not only that, but also they work together with Paul. And that he was a tent maker also. Now, honestly, when we think about Paul, we think about Paul the tent maker, right? I mean, that's the way we usually describe it. When I start quoting in the Bible, it says, the tent maker says, now, you know, we think about this, that both of these are working together, spreading the gospel, making tents, spreading the gospel. But what was Paul? Was Paul simply a tent maker or was he an apostle? Which one came first? And I think we know the answer to that one there. That the tent making was a way to survive, to be able to pay for his bills, but he was an apostle of Christ Jesus. And we think about Priscilla and Aquila. And I know that next line there doesn't really help make a lot of sense. I misspelled a word or two there. Or I don't know what I was thinking when I asked that same question. But basically the question is just say, what were Priscilla and Aquila? Were they tent makers first or were they Christians first? And again, you just have to keep in mind what's most important in life. The most important is to be a Christian. And whatever occupation you choose to do, make sure you're a Christian doing that occupation. The old question I heard many years ago that made an impression on me was, can a person be, and gave a number of occupations like, can a person be a policeman and be a Christian and go to heaven? Can a person be a, I don't know, whatever else, a soldier and be a Christian and go to heaven? Can a person be a farmer and Christian and go to heaven? And the answer to those questions was, outstanding when I got to the end of all these questions, I said no. And I thought, what? You mean I can't be a teacher and be a Christian and go to heaven? But then the next point was, what you can be is you can be a Christian and be a teacher, a soldier, a policeman, and all those things to go to heaven. First of all, though, you have to be a Christian. You have to come first in your life. You have to be a Christian first. And so that's what they were here. They were Christians making tents as they worked together with Paul. And we see this in the Lord's work. And we see this, and you know, we ask them, what would they have said? I think obviously the answer would have been, they would say, I'm a Christian. But not only that, but also, they worked together with Paul in his travels. And as you go on down here in this 18th chapter, another passage of the Bible, we find that they didn't just stay at Corinth. In fact, when Paul leaves Corinth to go to Ephesus, in verse 18 says, Paul still remained a good while, then he took leave of the brethren, and Silver, Syria, and Priscilla, and Aquila were with him. And he goes ahead and explains some things about Paul, what he does down there, and has his hair cut off at Cenchrea, before he taken a vow, and came to Ephesus, and he left them there, for himself in their synagogue to reach the Jews. And that is, that they went on and trapped Paul, and when they were separated from Paul, they were, again, still serving God. That the religion traveled with them. Their dedication to God traveled with them. Some Christians are some people can be committed, but their commitment is to a certain place. And we have to make sure our commitment is, first of all, to Christ. I remember whenever my parents was getting close to retirement age and the factory they worked at decided to relocate down to Macon, Georgia. And there was a really tough time they had there because they could take a buyout. They were within 3 years of retirement. They could take a buyout or they could move the factory. The company was moving down to Macon, Georgia, work for 3 years. And then they could decide whether to come, stay down there or retire and come back up to Kentucky. And they decided to go down there and work and then come on back after retire. But there was a lot of Christians that worked at that factory, that place, and employed a lot of people. And some of those folks, as they moved down to Georgia, Macon, Georgia, some of those folks really got involved in the works of the congregation down there. But other Christians, when they got down there, just kind of like, they left their religion back home. It's still up there in Kentucky someplace. And they just did not serve God as they should. We need to make sure that our religion travels with us. No matter where I go. Whether I'm on vacation or if I have to relocate, that's going to be with me. I'm still a Christian no matter where I am. And that's what I see with Aquila and Priscilla here. But not only that, but also, what I notice is that they work also for the truth. And that's what they stood up for. As you go on down, in this 18th chapter, says something else about them. And there's a lot of lessons, again, be preached out of this passage here. That'll be later on. But in Acts 18, verse 24, it says, now a certain Jew named Apollos, born of Alexander, an eloquent man and mighty in scriptures. In other words, he was something else. That's one of those guys that people line up to hear. Today, we may talk about preachers that are kind of like the elite preachers that everybody says, yeah, I want to hear that guy. That was Apollos there. He was eloquent. A really, really good speaker. And what? In the scriptures, mighty. Powerful. And came to us. This man had been instructed the way of the Lord. And being fervent in spirit, he spoke and taught accurately things, Lord, though he knew only the baptism of John. Now again, there's a whole lesson there. But I just want to focus on Priscilla here. So he began to speak boldly in synagogues. When Aquila and Priscilla heard him, they took him aside and explained to him the way of God more accurately. Now again, notice they're working together for the truth. And when they find somebody that's not teaching exactly right, they take him aside and they simply explain to him the truth. There wasn't a big blow up. There wasn't a big controversy about it. They didn't write him up in a newspaper someplace. They simply said, there's things you need to know that also you don't. And sometimes, you know, again, the ability to just kind of be like, have your speech season with grace, a grace season of salt, Colossians 4 verse 6 says, there's times we need to just be like that. And they had that quality. There have been times people come to me, and I will admit as a preacher, and somebody comes to me and says, you know, I think you had it wrong there, that the first response would be easy to just kind of become very defensive and kind of like, you know, I don't want to hear you talk to me. Don't get away. But there are times people come to you and they have such a good demeanor about them that you kind of like, you know, I really appreciate that. I really appreciate people that have that demeanor that can come and talk to you and somebody say, here's what the Bible teaches. And that's what they're doing. They're defending the truth. And the last thing about them is the fact that also that they worked with devotion. And as you read on about them, just kind of staying with them outside of the book of Acts, in Romans 16, chapter verse 3, say, great Priscilla and Aquila, my fellow laborers in Christ Jesus, who risked their own necks for my life, to whom not only I give thanks, but also all the churches of the Gentiles. And goes in verse 5, likewise, greet the church that is in their house. Greet my beloved Epaphras, who is first fruits of Achaia to Christ. And one thing is that they were willing to sacrifice their lives to help Paul. When he says that they risked their own necks, they risked their own lives for his. We don't know when that was. Was that at Ephesus? Possibly. We don't know. He doesn't specify, does he? But when he says that, he's not just using hyperbole. Sometimes we take somebody, tell somebody, say, well, you are a lifesaver. We really don't mean that, literally. Paul does. And one thing about risking your life for somebody else is that you really have to be devoted. But I tell you what is requires even more devotion is whenever you're willing to risk the life of your loved ones. They were willing to risk their lives, both their lives, for Paul. And that shows me true devotion in their lives. And the second thing is that the idea of the church in their house. The church being in their house. Which could again be dangerous because this here wasn't a very popular religion among the Jews, among the Romans. And you have brethren come to your house, and I take this as literally the idea of the church were being in their house in this passage here, that this was risking their lives again, going on with what I just said. But not only that, but just have the church in your own house. Think about that for a second. What if this morning we would say, okay, tonight let's everybody meet at your house. And we'll be there at 5 o'clock. How would you feel about that? How many ladies may first of all think, I gotta clean up things. You know, I gotta take care of stuff. And just the, maybe the situation having all the people inside your room and your house. I remember I tried out one place and they had a small group. They had bought a house and had converted where part of it was auditorium, had a couple classrooms, had a couple other rooms, had a kitchen, bathroom. And their idea was that whoever they hired, it was me or anybody else, that they would live in that house. And a part of the bedroom, and you know, you have a study there, you have the kitchen and bathroom. And when I heard that, I thought, well, that's very convenient, that'd be very nice. Then I walked away from that for a few days, and I thought about that. I thought, every week, twice or three times a week, people would be coming into this house. And that means I had to have, I had to take care of them in ways where people come in. It's inconvenient, is my point. It's been inconvenient. Not only dangerous, it's inconvenient. So they were willing to do that. Which says something about them also. And finally, he says, 2 Timothy 4, verse 19, Greek Priscilla and Aquila, Prisca, actually, which is kind of a neat name, much like we often short people's names. It's an Aquila and the household of Onesiphorus. And what stands out to me about this is that at the end of Paul's life, and this is the last chapter Paul writes in all the Bible, he's facing death, but what we need to see is that he's thinking of them. They thought enough of them that he mentioned them by name. Not them only. There's others he mentions. But he mentions them by name. And so that says something to me about how valuable they were to Paul, how much Paul loved them. And so that's one of the lessons I gathered from this year. You know, congregations need all kinds of Christians. I mentioned that single Christians, preached a series of lessons on that last year. Young Christians, old Christians, married couples working together. And that all of those makes the congregation strong and for the cause of Christ. And they're valuable as immeasurable. That there's often people probably you have known in your life that still influence you because of how they worked together and what they did for the church where you assembled at the time. We need to make sure that we're doing the same thing. That we're trying our best to be as good service of God as we can, whether single or young or old or married. And following the example of Priscilla and Aquila is a good example to follow. I appreciate your kind attention this morning. We do have a song selected now, our way of encouraging anyone who is here who maybe is not a Christian, that it's an opportunity to obey the gospel of Christ. Well, I remember that, to be baptized for remission of sins, but also for us as Christians to pray and help one another. And there's need for that this morning. You need prayers of the saints. Why don't you let us know as we stand, as we sing.